This is the loving kindness, first of the four immeasurables.
So I believe Joseph did an introduction, but I'm just going to go a very brief thing for people who are new. So loving kindness, which is called metta in Pali, is one of the four mental states that we are asked to cultivate in ourselves. There are four mental states, and loving kindness is the first one. The other three are compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, which we will be doing down the road. So these mental states they connect most directly with our desire for true happiness. You know, this is what we cultivate when we want to, you know, to be happy. And of these four states, goodwill, loving kindness, metta, is the most fundamental. That's how it's been described by many teachers. It's not my opinion. The wish for true happiness for ourselves and others, it's what led the Buddha to search for liberation and teach it to others, his goodwill towards all mankind. So loving kindness is likened to a soft rain that penetrates the heart, relaxing the defense mechanisms associated with fear and ill will. So when I was speaking to Robert about it, you know, there are five precepts in Buddhism, the ethical precepts we all are expected to begin our practice with. One is not to physically harm people. The other one is not to steal, not to speak untruths or speak harshly. The other one is not to exploit another person sexually, you know, to use it. And the fifth one is not to take intoxicants. And I was telling Robert, when you think of those precepts, they are all providing safety to the other person. It's saying, in my presence, you are safe. In my presence, I will not harm you physically. In my presence, what you possess, I will not steal from you. In my presence, I will not lie about you or slander you or speak harshly to you. So in a way, that's goodwill, you know, that it's basic goodwill. It's what we cultivate for all human beings, and it helps keep us safe too. You know, the intoxicants, I will not be intoxicated and do the things that intoxicated people. So for me, at least how I understand goodwill is true, you want to help people, but also that basic no harm. It's the first precept, don't do any harm to yourself or to others. Continue. Yes.
It, you know, sounds difficult to be loving and kind all the time, but these transcendental states can be developed from glimpses of these emotions we have all the time. You know, we often have love and care for the animals in our lives, or an animal, this wonderful dog here, Finn, and you know, if you see an animal hurt in the side of the street, I mean, people stop. And also, you know, our willingness to help strangers. You know, you can say, well, a mother will help her child, or a fireman's paid to do that. But there are, you know, many instances of perfect strangers running into buildings that are burning to help with people. There are, you know, so we have glimpses of these within us all the time that we can build on. However, most of the time our egos are involved, and we, you know, get bunged up with it. We get involved in grasping, which is not, you know, pure love. We want someone to stay close. So
yeah. So the Metta Sutta, and the Sutta means discourse in Pali, is one of the most important or fundamental teachings in Buddhism. It's a whole long sermon, a long discourse on what it is, what it means to love people, loving kindness. And in the middle of it, the Buddha, you know, he uses as the perfect example the mother's love for her child, her only child. And I'm just going to read you that short passage that is extracted from the sutta. He says, as a mother would risk her own life to protect her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. And one of the teachers, you know, one of my friends who's a very ardent Buddhist, he said, he's particularly focusing on the protective instinct, a mother protecting her child. It's not a mother having ambition for her child or her mother doing, you know, it's that when you protect, you're not, it's just the other person is the focus. It's not, you know, marry in a way that makes me happy or, you know, don't leave me. None of those feelings. The word protect, as a mother would risk her own life to protect her child. And he's saying, you know, I'll step aside if you can be safe or if you can be. So I think it's lovely that, you know, that's the example of what we should be like for all sentient beings.
And Pema has brought up, also I think we've talked about it before, the mother bird caring for the little baby bird, which is, you know, if you've seen them when they just come out of the shell, they're really homely. They have no feathers. They're just this pathetic little desperate thing with this huge mouth, rah, you know, hollering for food. But the mother cares for it anyway. And there's that expression that Yasmin had brought up, you know, a face only a mother could love. You know, we think of that. But I want to include fathers, too, because I do think, you know, I heard a story about a woman who, and her husband who couldn't have children, and it was the husband who, you know, didn't have enough sperm, but they did an artificial insemination. It was long, long ago. And so they were biologically not the father's children, and nobody knew what was going on. It was way in the past. But the mother did leave those children and go back to her home country or somewhere else. And that father, who, you know, these were not his biological children, but and there were two girls, you know, it wasn't, I need a son. You know, he cared for those two girls just very tenderly their whole lives. And finally, the daughters found out, you know, he told them. And he had told them, they remembered that he had told them before that, the child you raise is the child that is your own. You know, so I want to give credit to the men, too. And so Pema emphasizes that we're going to do an exercise, but these are aspiration practices, which is different from affirmation. You know, affirmation, we tell myself I am great. Aspiration, we're trying to be good, you know, hoping. And she does say, you know, we can't suppress our feelings. I mean, you might feel really angry and rotten towards someone, and it's sort of a stretch to think, oh, I'm going to wish well for this person who drives me crazy and I can't stand. But I was going to quote a little bit on page 38. She states, you know, we can expect to encounter resistance. We have our limits. And this is like a workout that stretches the heart beyond its current limits. And we are learning firsthand what everyone who has ever set out on this path has learned. We are all a paradoxical bundle of rich potential that consists of both neuroses and wisdom. And so in order to develop loving kindness, there is a practice, and we're going to try some of that at least tonight. And one of the things I think is our teachers in the past have talked about finding that soft spot within yourself where you're vulnerable, that really tender spot where you can be hurt. And I think that maybe that is where some of this comes from. And when you're, you know, first we're going to wish loving kindness for ourselves and then for someone we dearly love, then for a friend for whom you naturally have goodwill, and then someone who we have neutral feelings about, and then someone we find difficult or offensive, and then all of the above, and then the whole universe, which is, you know, this is hard or difficult. So,
I'll just say, you know, so that progression from yourself to to someone for whom it's easy for you to feel loving kindness, to the end where you feel, or you try to, or your intention, your aspiration to feel loving kindness for people you find difficult and offensive. So the progression has been set out as this is how you do it, you know, because you start with the easiest and the most important, which is love for yourself, loving kindness for yourself, and then you go down to
and
the others.
It is said, like some people, you know, you can stay with the first step for a week.
Or
and
for your whole
you
lifetime.
Said for your, you said, Yasmin said, for your whole lifetime, you know, if that's all you can do. And also, we talked before, Elise, about finding your own words for this. You know, the chant, those words may not have that much meaning for you, but like one person said, his wish was that he would reach his full potential and that everyone else would reach their full potential. And there was a woman who said, may I trust in my basic goodness and in everyone else's basic goodness. And, you know, the other thing I thought about this, so it's, I think, choose your own words that you can, that have meaning for you. And I think the other thing I thought of is, you know, maybe you stretch to wish them goodwill, but it's if someone really irritates you, but, you know, it's always helpful to be kind. You know, if someone's making you crazy, it never helps to be aggressive. You know, lose your temper, yell, swear, which, you know, However much fun it is, and then however much I do all those things, you know, it's not like I'm good at this, but I can remember in my head, at least, that it's helpful. I can at least be kind. I can try to be kind to someone, you know, that I...
I should have been kind,
yes.
So, in the loving kindness about this aggression, you know, so you begin with yourself, because being loving and kind doesn't mean you allow somebody to exploit you. That's not loving and kind to yourself then, nor is it loving and kind to the other person. And this, I don't know if people have known this book, Loving Kindness, a Revolutionary... Right? So... apparently, Sharon gives an example of, so you're, there are three people in a boat, you, your friend, and your enemy. And one person has to get out because otherwise the boat would sink. And who should that be? And if it's very easy for you to say your friend, you fail the question. No, it should not be easy, because all of you, you, your friend, and your enemy are equally worthwhile. They are, you know... it should not be easy for you to say, anybody but me. No, that's not the answer. You have to love yourself too, you know. It's, yes. So if anybody asks you that question, I wonder, you can do the cheat sheet. No, it's not me. Huh? Yeah. No, but it's, because it's very important, I think, you know, not to forget that that's why you do it for yourself. You know, not, this is not about making yourself a doormat or getting people to... loving people. It's just kindly pushing away. And there was another example in this. She was in India and she was in a rickshaw, and the rickshaw man had tried to do something, you know, because she was on a meditation retreat. So she went back to the monastery and asked, what should I have done? And I think her mentor said, you should have taken your umbrella and with all the kindness in you, give him a good whack.
I like that, yeah.
So, yeah. You need that antidote.
Yeah. But also taught that when you retaliate against somebody that has done something to you that you despise, you're picking up hot coals to throw at them.
That's a nice way to think about it. So you're burning your hands.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
That's, yeah. Sort of why they say it's important to forgive, because you keep that poison within you if you don't forgive. You know, it's like eating rat poison so the other person, or the rat will die. Okay. Why don't we try the exercise? I'm, and it is the
think if we do it for 1 minute, is that enough for people?
For each person. People?
For each.
Oh, okay.
For each.
Person, yeah.
No, for
we
each.
Do more.
For each one? For 2 minutes? Months. Okay, 2 minutes for each one. At least. All right, Elise wants to meditate. Well, I'm going to. Okay, we'll do a few minutes for each one. Okay, I'm going to ring the rin, or if that's what you say.
Are you going to tell us what this is? Because I don't know.
You can say the chant. May I enjoy happiness,
yes.
And the roots,
yes,
of happiness.
Yes, but I'm going to ask. I'm just going to say, we're going to wish this for ourselves. Or I'll read this. Yeah, may I enjoy happiness. Well, there's a different progression. Okay, and I'll just say who it's for after I read the first one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May I enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May someone I dearly love enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. Next, we're going to choose a friend. May my friend enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. next we're going to think of a person of who is neutral to us. And it's important to pick someone specific. You can do that, and we'll use the same words. May this person enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. The next one, number 5, is to choose someone whom you find difficult or offensive and to wish them happiness. I'm just going to ring, and you can use your own words for that, okay? One, number 6, is to include all the beings in the above 5 steps. This is called dissolving the barriers. You're going to wish happiness for myself, for I, my beloved friend, my beloved, my friend, the neutral person, the difficult person. May all of us together enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. So let you get set, and I'll hit the ring.
The discussion.
So, the last one is to extend loving kindness to all beings throughout the universe. You can start close to home and widen the circle more and more. So let's do that for a couple minutes. Okay, I'm wondering how people found this exercise. Didn't give much time to each one.
It was interesting to me that you said something about, a place in your body that's sensitive. So I was thinking of my solar plexus area. But then when I started with I, it sort of moved from, I was focusing on my solar plexus, thinking the happiness was there, and it just moved up into, the feeling moved up into my chest and my shoulders, kind of like an expansive feeling. That was really cool. And then it was kind of that way until I got to the neutral person, and then it just started closing down. And then when I got to my, the person that, that I have trouble with, probably everybody in here has the same person. I won't say who. But I moved from directly into the center of my chest, it didn't hurt, but it was a lump, a lump right in my chest.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. And then as the 2 minutes went on, I felt it lightened.
That's interesting.
So it was still there, but it did lighten up. And then the world, and the universe, it went in, that feeling kind of went spread into my arms. And that was cool, too.
Yeah.
And it's I didn't think about that ahead of time or anything. It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
So that was neat.
That is
interesting. Yeah.
When we first started this group, I think our teachers talked a lot about finding the soft spot within you. And I think that's hard to maintain when you get to people you don't like. Other people have reactions.
I thought it was good that we didn't have a lot of time, especially with the person that we have trouble with, because we might have concentrated too much on the trouble that we have with them. I was thinking of that person in maybe a more positive light. I was just thinking of the person and not concentrating on the trouble I have with them. I was just kind of sending out good vibes in the short time. And I thought that was a more positive look good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I feel better about that person as a result of the short time, whereas I might have been concentrating on the trouble.
Yeah, that's...
So I thought that was... I feel better about it.
That's
I had a hard time with the person I didn't like. There's blocks. It was very difficult.
I actually, I do the practice, and I have four things that I wish, and I do it, like, I'll do it just if I'm going somewhere, if I climb stairs, because it sort of takes my mind off that I don't like to climb four flights of stairs for work. And so the four things, I think maybe it's a workshop that I went to with Sharon Salzberg or something. There are, I think, four things, and it's like, the way I do it is, may be free from enmity and danger, may be free from mental suffering and despair, may be free from physical suffering and fear of pain, and may you see the love that moves in and through you. And so when I do that, like, I always feel like the students I teach, there's people fighting for the difficult spot. Like, mm-hmm. me, I want to be the most difficult one.
Yeah.
And so when I can think about, like, may you be free from all this kind of suffering you might have.
Yeah.
I realized, like, you know, most people aren't choosing to be really difficult because it's fun. It's because they kind of have a situation that's painful for them, that's where it comes from. And so sort of thinking about that I like, oh, right, the family situation is really tough. Yeah. They struggle with this mm-hmm. and that and the other thing.
But sometimes they seem to enjoy it so much.
Well, but I think
it's... why we want them to be happy.
Yeah, because they...
Isn't happiness.
Then they should enjoy
making trouble.
Have a good time.
Well, no, but you think about, like, if they had real joy, they wouldn't go for that. That wouldn't really... That's not a thing that brings people real joy. It brings... The same way that you can have someone who irritates you. And like I tell people a story that a kid who bothered me, and one day they said, he got upset at something I said, and I said, well, good, now he's got a taste of what he does for me. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't actually feel good, mm-hmm. but I felt it in the moment. I felt like, good, he's suffering too. And then I thought, well, that's not really my goal in life, to watch other people suffer. Mm-hmm. But when I'm suffering, then I feel like, well, why not everybody? Mm-hmm. Everybody join in. I'm having a bad day, you can too.
Wow. Right, and I think it's like important that, you know, it says not only should they enjoy happiness, but the roots of happiness.
Right.
And in the Buddhist sort of philosophy, you know, the roots of happiness are loving kindness and sympathetic joy and compassion. So we are wishing that they will also then have, you know, ground themselves in those roots instead of, you know, going to the casino or doing what whoever this difficult person does every day. Right? We are wishing them...
Mine goes around shooting guns.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kept thinking about him as a young father. You know, that was an aspect of him.
When I think about, you know, what you were talking about, Elise, is people causing trouble, that's not their intention, but I thought of, like, kids who are troubled seeking negative attention because it's attention.
Right.
You know, or little kids. You know, all little kids do that, I think, don't they? Or a lot of little kids who are troubled get... They just want any attention, so they'll... Or if they're have a very negative self-image, they seek out especially negative attention, I think.
Well, if that's the only... So some kids... that I've worked with, I mean, the only attention they get is for negative stuff.
Yeah, that's all they know. Is, yeah. Yeah. And I've known, you know, I knew, actually have a family member who's a nephew who's so troubled, I felt like, you know, his identity is that he's a bad person. That's who he is. You know, it's very heartbreaking that's how he sees himself. I am a bad person.
That's why this is... It's so hard to pick up this practice at any one point without involving all the other points, because if you're going to wish your enemies genuine equanimity and happiness, it's not a matter of giving them what they want, it's what they actually need. But to understand what they actually need calls upon you to have develop yourself too, so you can't ever centralize on yourself or anyone else. It always involves not only focusing on someone's need, but focusing on realizing that there's limitations in your understanding of that at the same time.
Yeah, and the point I wanted to make is I've read that, you know, all these states have what's called a far enemy and a near enemy. So the far enemy is the enemy, like, of good loving kindness. The far enemy would be hatred. You know, that's very easily identified. The near enemy, they call, is the conditional love. Like saying, I will love you only if you this, and this. And, we have variations of that. And I think Elise once gave us a wonderful example of her wanting her student to do something and behave so that she would feel better in class.
What I wished him well was he would sit down and do his work.
Yes.
So that would make him
easier
happy.
For you.
Yes. That's, I think that's perfect. That's what I wish for people.
So it's asking to be aware of what you know, in a way we are saying the difficult person, I will have loving kindness to you if you only just do what I think you should be doing.
Be good.
Yeah. I think of parents or, you know, romantic relationships, people grasping.
Yeah.
Not wanting to let go, wanting to control the other person or just you know, really that kind of not wanting the joy to continue every minute and
right.
Want it to be a certain way.
I find it helpful to recall the teaching on Buddha nature that all beings are endowed with Buddha nature,
mm-hmm.
that their true essence is enlightened awareness. Which is obscured by conditioning and habit patterns that they really can't see through. And I've been fortunate enough to have met teachers that have affected me in such a way that I've been able to be conscious of this in myself. Not that I've overcome it, totally. But most people have not, and they're conditioned, so conditioned by their culture, their habitual, in a negative way, by their habit patterns and their ignorance of their true nature, ignorance of their own true nature, and that. This is the source of their suffering, and this is the reason why they act the way they do, and seek for happiness in the ways in which they do, which are do nothing but cause them more suffering. And nobody, you know, the older I get, the more I'm aware of the fact that everybody, if they live long enough, they're going to experience grief. They're going to experience deep loss. They're going to experience despair, depression. It's inevitable. And that we're all subject to that. We're all subject to that. And if I can remind myself that their nature, their Buddha nature, is really the same as my Buddha nature, as my essence. And there's a shared being there between us, no matter how revolting their behavior may be. That's there. Remember when I studied philosophy, Schopenhauer once posed the kind of a conundrum: how is it that somebody could risk their own life, leap into a flaming building, and save somebody that they don't even know, never have met, from death and suffering? How is it that they can do that? And the only way in which even Schopenhauer, well, I shouldn't say even, but Schopenhauer was able to understand that was to realize that they are you. They are an aspect of your very nature.
Also because of love.
Well, that's what love is. I mean, realizing that unity, that shared being. Yeah.
And if you read, you know, this Metta Sutta, the whole discourse, one thing that really resonates for me is its insistence that you have loving kindness for those who are great and those who are small. It's not just loving kindness for those who feel, you know, are suffering. It's nothing to do with compassion for everyone, for the high and the low, the great and the small. And speaking of difficult people and having loving kindness for them, I just want to share, you know, what the culture that I sort of, this is different from when I came 40 years ago to the country, right? So there's a huge racial divide. And you know, I belong to, you know, not quite where all of you belong. And what distresses me and what I protest is, you can have this conversation without demonizing a whole race as being oppressive. I just completely reject that. And I think it's very important to recognize that, you know, individually, every person, you know, is this Buddha nature person. And it just drives me, I don't know, I just don't like that division that is occurring, like this whole, these are the people who oppressed us. What do you mean these are the people who oppressed us? You know, there has been oppression through history and some, but I don't want to hate anybody.
Yeah.
I don't want to demonize, and unfortunately, I see that. Feel that this is the antidote to that. That even those who were powerful deserve our life. You know, who we think were powerful and great. It doesn't say you can exclude anybody. It doesn't allow you to exclude anybody. And so that's just my spiel. I just feel it's. I just sense it.
Yeah. I once went to a really moving talk by a Tibetan Lama that was in Chinese prison for 20 years of his life and was tortured and subject to terrible conditions by his guards. And he said that he never felt that he wasn't free because he never allowed himself to feel hatred or enmity toward his keepers. This, I think, is extraordinary, but possible.
It doesn't, I mean, it's hard to imagine.
It is.
You know,
I don't remember who the story is about. There's a story of someone who, I was Mandela or somebody else, who was so kind to his guards who were supposed to be mean to him that they kept having to switch the guards because he'd get them to feel kindly towards him, and that wasn't their job. Their job was to hate and be mean.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you don't...
Around.
What?
Knock them around.
Right, and when you don't return it, then it's very hard for the guards to keep pushing back. You know, it's really a very powerful story. You know? It'd be nice if I remembered who it was, but and you know, I think that's the power of it, and that the difficulty of it, that it's really hard to do in a situation where you're feeling in any way abused, and that's why the practice is so powerful. Because if you just keep saying to yourself, then you can try to be like I mean, because the other part is a lot of times when someone who's really difficult is mean to you, it's so not about you. Like, we take everything so personally.
Yeah.
They really don't care who you are. They're just having, their life is really miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's about them and how
and
they're suffering.
Suffering.
It's not, it's not about you. They're going to pretty much, and if I know for myself, people, you know, especially unexpectedly touch that place where I'm vulnerable and I feel insecure. It's like, oh, it's really hard to feel warm. You know, I get defensive immediately. I just, I don't like that person. You know, they saw through me. Or it's just...
Or they grew up with me.
What did you say, Muffy?
When they grew up with me.
Or, yes.
It's also true that it's not just the heroes, it's not just the people in prison doing these wonderful things. It's every day, you know. The person comes through and you think he's saying something mean, and he isn't really. Or, you know, you just make a road rage. I mean, there's those all sorts of little tiny things that they do that are, you know, get us worked up, that we could. Remember this practice. It'll be better.
Right.
How can you tell whether you really mean it or not?
When you or them?
That we really mean it.
May
that person find happiness and good and happiness.
Yeah.
And it's somebody that you don't like, but how can you tell when you're just saying that and when you mean it?
Well, the test would be that when you encounter that person, you're how you behave toward them.
But I think if you, even if you don't feel that, if you, you know, Pamela said if you, you know, it's a stretch to feel this, but I've read in some place, like to just be saying the words is like part of the practice.
Yeah, that's what I said. Does it matter? I think you just do it. You know, you just do it. You know,
I think she also says that you can notice that feeling of thinking to yourself, I don't really mean this.
Yes.
And notice what that feels like for you. Like, I'm saying this thing I don't really believe, and then sort of look at that. Like, and then to say to yourself, like, do I really want that person to be miserable? Is that going to make my situation with them better? You know, if you have a boss who's always sort of disagreeable, if they're miserable, well, they're not nice to you. Maybe if they were happy, they'd be a little less miserable to you.
Well, I always think kindness, you know, I mean, there's certainly times when I want to, you know, scream and swear, and I do. I can be a terrible bully in my family. But it doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't get any result that I want. You know, it doesn't. It just is useless and destructive.
And what Roberta said about it's an aspiration. It's not like we are expected to be there right today. It's the goal.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the practice as this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And until I'm there, I'm just going to practice. Or until I'm halfway there, I'll be practicing. Imagine what the situation would be even here if half the people, or the people who hate certain kinds of, say, the people of color, if they just said, okay, I'm just going to do a meditation of goodwill to those people, whether I feel it or not. Imagine what a transformation that would be for them. Just the idea that you would do that, right? Instead of, you know, they don't have to, you know, like, even if they don't feel it, they switch that and say, I'm going to wish them well. Wow, that would be revolutionary. To, you know, and that's what it's called, the revolutionary act of happiness. And I was thinking of Esther Mary's question about, you know, she gives another example where she, you know, she's been saying loving kindness to herself, and then one day she drops something and it breaks, like a vase or something. And she says, oh, you silly thing. You know, where earlier she would have really berated herself and said, oh, you're so clumsy and you all this. She found herself being much softer. It just came on. So it's...
It's like a softening.
Yeah, it is a softening. Yeah. And it might come unexpectedly after you've practiced for some time.
Yeah. I think that's why I thought of touching the soft spot within you.
Yeah.
Before you start the practice, to find that vulnerable soft spot. Because we all have that tender heart somewhere inside us.
I would say when you said the thing about the baby bird, so I don't know if I told the story that when I went to this retreat this summer, one day I was outside walking and I got back to the retreat center just ready to go in, and there was actually a very newly hatched baby bird just in the driveway.
Wow.
And I got something to, you know, picked it up and held it and looked in it, and as I looked I realized how newly hatched it was and that there was no... You know, there's no helping it in terms of keeping its life going. And I sort of just sat with it for the half hour, and I thought about, like, just, this is the whole care it's going to get in its whole life, is me holding. It's not going to, it was looking to, it, you could see it waiting to be fed. And that its skin had no feathers on it. I mean, and then I finally, somebody came out, because I was really struggling with, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And he'd done a lot of outdoor stuff, and he said, you just put it somewhere secluded and hope that it just dies there. And that's the best you can do. But it was this very, like, you know, that you could, that's all I could do is sit and hold it.
Yeah, but I think it's great you did hold it. I mean, you have to believe that it knew somehow that there was a mother, some sort of mother loving it, if not a birdie mother, you know. The least mother.
Well, you know, there's that kid story of Are You My Mother? That the little bird falls out of the nest, but not quite as little as this, and keeps looking for its own mother.
It was a great edition of Nature last night on TV, on PBS. It was filmed in Botswana, in the Okavango River Delta. And there was a lion nest with her three cubs who had been separated by a flood from the pack. And she was hunting and got into a battle with a ox. Like a bison, but the African version of a bison, and got badly injured, hip and leg. Her leg was crushed, and she just lay down, and it took a long time for her to recover. But she kept, even in the pain and the struggle with her injuries, she made sure that her cubs were taken care of. That she, even with these debilitating injuries, she went into the water, she got out a crocodile, and she fed that crocodile to her cubs. Poor crocodile. But she, in all this pain and agony, she did everything she could to care for those cubs. And she did survive. And the cubs survived as well. And they eventually joined up with the pride again. But it was just incredible, the devotion of this creature to her children.
I saw part of that, and I was, I just saw more at the end, and I saw she was running after these gazelles or whatever. I couldn't believe she could do it.
I know.
That how can she run with this funky leg.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I don't know how healed she was, but she was walking along. I mean, and you could see her leg was bowed and her foot was, you know, duck-toed or, you know, it was really deformed.
Yes.
And you just hope that was healed, but she walked even with that sort of mangled leg. She walked, you know, physical therapist, I'd call it a normal gait. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't hopping off of that leg. She was bearing weight on it.
And so many, you know, stories of the Buddha that we hear. I mean, I wasn't born Buddhist, but, you know, it's about excluding no one, about, you know, who would you exclude from loving kindness? Who would you say, you know, there's a story about Tara, the goddess of compassion, if you heard it, you know. So the Buddha was enlightened and he crossed and then he looked back and he saw the suffering in the world and his teardrop became Tara, who's the goddess of compassion, and she says, "You go ahead. I'm going to stay till the last one has crossed." So she doesn't say only, till only, you know. She says, "Till the last one has crossed, I'm going to stay back with them." And there's also this story, this Anguli, you know, the Buddha, during the Buddha's time, there was this man who just was a serial killer, and one of the things he did is he would cut off the thumb of the people who he killed and wear it like a chain. And so he had like 100 thumbs, you know, like a garland. And how the Buddha sat with him and converted him to kindness. So, you know, for whatever, it's not, you know, it's an aspiration that we exclude no one, that everybody is included, even the difficult person.
Well, I think even in this installment of nature, you know, it occurred to me that, well, lions and tigers, predators, they kill, but they don't do it out of hatred. It's their nature to kill. And they actually, there was another program on last week about wolves the big national park in Wyoming. That wolves were eliminated out of that park, and the then there was this overpopulation of their prey, which was causing all kinds of problems in the park. They brought the wolves back, and it brought a balance and an order to the ecology of Yellowstone. Those animals don't kill out of hatred. They kill because that is their nature. They're carnivores. We kill out of hatred. And that's very different. It's very different. I was in Peru a few years ago, and I had the good, very good fortune to get to know some tribal people down there, the Shipibo people, and they used to be cannibals.
Wow.
And they said they told me that they stopped being cannibals when they discovered this sacred plant that taught them that we're all of the same nature, and that to kill and eat another, they don't even eat animals anymore. They're vegetarians. That to kill an animal or to kill another human being is to kill yourself.
I feel badly always for the young men that are sent away to be soldiers, you know? I mean, they take these, you know, not fully grown men. I mean, they're 18,
yeah,
and their frontal lobes are not fully developed
until, yeah,
what, 25 or something?
Yeah.
And they train them to hate and, you know, what it... I mean, yeah, when you see all the people coming back with PTSD, I mean, it used to be called, what, shell shock?
Shell shock,
and
yeah,
then it was something else.
Battle fatigue, I think.
Battle fatigue, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know... it was easier to understand it then, but PTSD is more accurate, post-traumatic stress disorder, but it's,
yeah,
you know, they ruin their lives,
yeah,
really.
And you know, the ones that, those young boys that have killed over there, Vietnam and in Iraq, many of them are tormented for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
They can't get over that, the fact,
yeah,
they did that.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to. Someone,
yes,
told them,
yeah,
you should,
yeah,
do that.
Sanctioned by,
yeah,
the government.
And then, yeah.
But it violated something much deeper.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you use the word trained. So you can be trained to hate, and so,
yeah,
we can.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you do in that training is to depersonalize your
yeah,
target.
Yeah.
Right. He's not a human. You know.
Yeah.
Like you don't get. So you can be then untrained when you like in this exercise, when you dissolve the boundaries,
yeah,
and you say, that person is me, actually.
Yeah.
I am that person.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it can work both ways.
Yeah, yeah. It strikes me. I think I was born in 1943. My great-grandfather was alive during the time when, in this country, you could own another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And you could treat them however you want. You could,
right,
kill them and beat them, not be held responsible. They were your possession? That's incredible. That wasn't that long ago. And it was done, it was justified by, these people are, they're not even human. They're,
yeah,
they're animals. Right? That's,
huh?
They're looked upon as,
right,
animals.
Right. And it becomes so easy to make that division, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've had experiences,
yeah,
with people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just exaggerating, but, oh, you eat breakfast? Yes, I do eat breakfast. I'm not so, you know, like this idea that, you know, that there's something very different about, you know, person,
yeah,
who's not, you know, like who wasn't born.
I
but it's like,
yeah,
what did you think? You know, like very basic things, they're surprised, mm-hmm, that, oh, you are like just, you know, you there's nothing extra. Nothing dividing you from me, you know, we are all.
Yeah, yeah.
But that. That's why, you know, I have this whole verse over and over again. Include everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Include,
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah.
You are not,
yeah,
different from them.
Yeah.
They are not different from you, no matter if they are, you know. Just says whether they are weak or strong, omitting none. That's the word. Don't omit anyone. That's from the discourse. The great or the mighty, medium, short or small.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it says that. Yes, it says don't, you know, radiate outwards,
yeah,
to everybody. You don't make distinctions about, you know,
mm-hmm,
are they white or not, black or people of color.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make that distinction. Just so. I think this is the most beautiful religious discourse in the world.
Yes.
It does, you know, just love everyone, love everything.